Okay, so welcome to the deep dive. Today we're going deep on something, well, kind of heavy. Sin. I know, not exactly the most upbeat topic,
No, not really.
but it's kind of a big deal, right? I mean, it's at the heart of so many belief systems,
Absolutely.
really shapes how we see ourselves and the world around us.
And it's something we all have to grapple with on some level.
Exactly. But we're going way beyond just the don't do this, don't do that kind of list.
Right.
Like, we want to get into what sin actually is. And, full disclosure, it gets pretty complex.
It does, yeah.
But hopefully, by the end of this deep dive, we'll all have a clearer picture of the whole thing.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so our main source material today comes from Dr. Robert A. Peterson.
Great theologian.
Yeah, he's got this incredible set of lecture notes on, well, the biblical description of sin.
And he draws a lot from other great thinkers, too.
Right, like John Mahoney.
Big influence.
Yeah, and we're going to be pulling in some insights from big names like John Calvin.
Oh, can't forget Calvin.
Yeah, right. And even Augustine. So
The heavy hitters, yeah.
this is going to be a real journey.
It is, yeah.
And when people hear the word sin, it's easy to jump to that list of rules.
Yeah, the thou shalt nots.
Exactly the things we're not supposed to
Don't
do.
steal, don't lie, don't covet your neighbor's ox or whatever.
Right. And, those are important, of course.
Of course.
But Dr. Peterson really pushes us to go deeper.
Much deeper.
Yeah. Like, he starts by making this really important distinction.
What's that?
Sin isn't just about the actions, the things we do that are wrong.
Oh, I see. It's more nuanced than that.
Yeah, much more.
So what else is there besides the actions?
Well, he breaks it down into three, like, interconnected ways sin shows up.
Three ways. Okay.
So there's commission,
Okay.
omission, and imperfection.
Okay. Break those down for me.
Yeah, so commission is, well, that's the one everyone usually thinks of first.
Yeah, the doing wrong.
Exactly. You do something wrong, you say something wrong, you even think something wrong.
Ooh.
Okay.
And he actually uses this example.
I love the good example.
It's from his childhood. He talks about breaking a window
Oh, yo.
and then lying about it and blaming his brother.
Oh, classic.
Right. So the lie in that moment, that was a clear act of commission,
Okay.
a straight up violation of, a moral standard.
Right.
But then there's omission.
Okay.
And this is where it gets a little trickier for some people.
I can see that.
Omission is about the things we don't do, the things we don't say, or even the things we don't think that we should.
Oh, interesting.
So in that same example, right, with the window, by not telling the truth and by blaming his brother,
Right.
Dr. Peterson was also failing to do what was right.
It was a sin of omission, too, you mean?
Exactly. It wasn't just a lie, but not doing what was honest.
A double whammy, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then there's imperfection.
Okay, this is the one I'm really curious about.
Yeah, this is a big one. It's about doing something that might look right.
But the motives are off, or the attitude's not quite there.
Oh, okay. So the action itself might not be technically wrong, but
But something's not pure about it.
it's tainted in a way.
Exactly. So
Wow.
let's say, even if Dr. Peterson had confessed to breaking the window, but only because he was afraid of getting caught,
I see.
that confession, outwardly, it's the right thing to do, right?
Yeah, on the surface, sure.
But it's still tainted by that imperfect motive.
Yeah, it's not truly coming from a place of wanting to make things right.
Exactly. And Dr. Peterson really emphasizes this.
Makes sense.
All our actions are ultimately measured against God's perfect character.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a high bar.
Yeah, it is. And to understand what that means, those moral guidelines, well, John Calvin's definition of moral law is really helpful here.
Okay, let's hear it.
He described it as, and I'm quoting here, the declared will of God directing and obliging mankind to do that which pleases him and to abstain from that which displeases him.
Okay, so it's about aligning our actions with God's will.
Exactly.
Interesting. And I guess the Ten Commandments would be a good example of that, right?
Oh, absolutely. They're like a cornerstone in so many faiths.
Yeah, those are some pretty clear do this, don't do that
Yeah.
instructions.
Right. But if you look closely, a lot of them are framed as prohibitions first.
Yeah, you're right. The thou shalt nots.
Like, you shall not murder, you shall not
You
steal.
shall not covet your neighbor's donkey.
Right. But they also imply these positive responsibilities.
No, how so?
Well, do not murder, for example.
Sorry.
That clearly suggests the inherent value of human life, right?
Absolutely.
So it implies we should be actively working to protect and enhance life.
Ah, okay, I see. It's not just about avoiding the negative action.
Exactly.
It's also about actively pursuing the positive.
Exactly. And what's really interesting is that in reality, every sin probably involves all three of these
Oh,
aspects.
wow. All three at once.
Yeah, commission, omission, and imperfection, just to different degrees. Huh. Can you give me an example?
Sure. Like the commandment about keeping the Sabbath holy,
Okay.
or the instruction to honor your parents. So if we don't actively set aside the Sabbath for its intended purpose,
Yeah.
or if we neglect to, really care for our parents,
Right.
that's omission right
By
there.
not fulfilling those obligations.
Exactly. But even when we do observe the Sabbath or we outwardly honor our parents, the question becomes, is our heart truly in it?
No, that's a good point.
Are we really loving God through our observance?
Or are we just going through the motions?
Exactly. Or with our parents, are we acting out of genuine love? Any lack in those internal attitudes, that's where imperfection comes in.
Ah, so it's like a spectrum almost.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
From complete disregard to, technically doing the right thing, but with the wrong attitude.
And Jesus really takes this to another level, doesn't he?
How
Well, when
so?
he sums up the whole law.
Yeah, the greatest commandment thing, right? Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah, powerful stuff.
He's bringing our inner world, like, right to the forefront.
Our motives, our attitudes, it's
Exactly.
not just about outward actions anymore.
Not at all. It's about the state of our heart.
Wow. So if we think about, say, the commandment about not lying, it's not just about avoiding, outright falsehoods. It's
Right.
also about the integrity of all our communication.
Our truthfulness, not just to others, but to ourselves.
Yeah, it's a much bigger thing when you think about it that way.
It really makes you think about what drives our behavior. Dr. Peterson gives some really good examples of how these inner attitudes, they fuel our outward actions.
Okay, give me an example.
Like greed,
Oh,
that
man.
desire for more, more, more.
Yeah, the never-ending
It's
hunger.
often the root of stealing.
Oh, that makes sense.
He talks about Gehazi and Elisha.
That's from the Book of Kings,
Yeah,
right?
Second Kings.
Okay.
Then there's
Oof, that's a powerful one.
it can lead to murder, just like with Joseph's brothers in Genesis.
Tragic story.
Yeah, and even lust,
Ah, yeah, that one always gets people talking.
Right. But Jesus talks about lust and the heart being like adultery right there in Matthew's gospel.
Wow, taking it seriously.
Exactly. It shows how much weight our inner desires actually carry.
Makes you think.
And then there's that 10th commandment.
Yeah, the coveting one.
Right. That one's all about our inner desires.
It's like thought police, almost.
Right. Prohibiting that intense longing for what others have.
It really highlights that sin is an inside job, you know?
It's not just superficial stuff.
Yeah, it starts within.
Okay, so sin is multifaceted.
Yeah, we've got that.
It's what we do wrong, what we don't do right.
And even our messed up motives behind good actions.
Exactly. But then Dr. Peterson takes us even further.
Where to next?
He talks about the dual nature of sin.
Dual nature. Okay, I'm intrigued.
He describes it in terms of guilt and something he calls pollution or sometimes corruption.
Guilt and pollution. Okay, two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, in a way.
Break it down for me.
Okay, so first, we got to make a distinction
Okay.
between what we call natural evil.
Like natural disasters and disease.
Yeah, things that aren't directly caused by human choices.
Okay.
And then there's moral evil.
Are bad choices, you mean?
Exactly, breaking those moral guidelines.
Right.
And moral evil are sins, they result in guilt before God.
Guilt. Okay.
Yeah, think of it like the legal consequence of breaking those guidelines.
Like being found guilty in a courtroom.
Exactly. And there are two sides to this guilt, too.
Two signs, huh?
Yeah, there's the personal feeling of responsibility,
Like,
like.
I messed up, that kind of thing.
Right, that sense of being blameworthy.
Yeah, we've all felt that.
But then there's the actual liability to punishment.
Oof, the consequences.
And this is a sobering thought.
Yeah.
Even actions that seem, I don't know, relatively small, they still incur guilt.
No free passes, huh?
Nope. As the theologian Marguerite Schuster points out, okay.
There's no magic line we cross
Yeah.
where suddenly we become guilty.
Interesting. So even those little white lies or those times we don't quite live up to our own standards.
It all adds up in a way.
Huh. Food for thought.
And then we've got this concept of pollution or corruption.
Okay, back to that.
It refers to the moral defilement that sin causes within us.
So it's not just about the outward act, but something that happens to us internally.
Exactly. It's like a contamination.
Yikes.
It goes deeper than just being legally guilty.
Okay, I'm starting to see the distinction.
Dr. Peterson uses this amazing analogy. He remembers seeing pictures.
Oh, I love a visual.
Of this heavily polluted town in Czechoslovakia back before environmental regulations.
Oh, wow. Yeah, this can be pretty grim.
And he describes how everything, the trees, the buildings, even the people, mm-hmm. they were all covered in this layer of grime.
Ugh, that's a powerful image.
Yeah, it suggests that sin isn't just an isolated thing.
More like something that spreads and contaminates. Exactly. And this pollution, it connects to a really fundamental truth.
What's that?
We don't just sin every now and then. We sin because we are sinners.
Ah, so it's not just about individual actions, but a state of being.
Yeah, at our core.
Wow. So where does this idea come from?
Well, Genesis 6.5 states that humanity's every thought was consistently evil.
Consistently, wow.
And Paul echoes this in Galatians. You know, he lists all these actions that flow from our sinful nature.
So it's like a deep-rooted corruption.
Exactly.
Okay, so we're inherently flawed. We've got guilt from our actions, and this pollution affecting us from the inside. Where do we go from here?
Well, Dr. Peterson then brings up this really profound point.
Okay, what's that?
The idea that sin is a personal offense against God.
Oh, interesting.
Now, I know for some people that might sound kind of abstract.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, why would my little mistakes matter so much to God?
Right, he's all-powerful, all-knowing. Why would he care about our little slip-ups?
Exactly. But the biblical perspective is that sin violates God's holy character.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
And we see this with Isaiah when he has this vision of God's holiness.
The prophet Isaiah.
Yeah, and he immediately cries out about his unclean lips.
Wow, so even Isaiah, a prophet, felt unworthy before God.
Yeah, and when Peter sees Jesus's miraculous power, you know, after the big catch of fish, he says, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man."
So both Isaiah and Peter, they had this deep awareness of their own imperfection.
Yeah, especially in the presence of divine purity.
It's like standing next to a pure white light and suddenly noticing every little speck of dust on yourself.
That's a great analogy.
So holiness, in this context, it's about God's separateness and moral purity.
And it stands in such stark contrast to our human, well, tendency to sin.
Right, our brokenness versus his perfection.
And James Orr, the theologian, he put it really well.
What did he say?
He said that sin isn't just a moral failing in isolation.
Okay.
It's fundamentally a religious issue.
Oh, interesting.
It's a transgression against God himself.
So we're not just messing up in a vacuum.
We're rebelling against God, putting our will above his.
Powerful stuff.
And Psalm 51, verse 4, puts it really bluntly.
Yeah, what does it say?
Against you, you only have I sinned.
Wow. Even when we hurt other people, the ultimate offense is against God.
Exactly.
Makes sense when you think about it.
It's only when we understand God's holiness,
his pureness,
and his love for us that we can grasp how serious sin really is.
That's a tough one to wrap your head around, though. How do we even begin to grasp the, I don't know, the enormity of sin if it's an offense against something so infinite?
Well, that's where Dr. Peterson lays out these seven measurements.
Measurements. Okay, I'm curious next.
To help us get a sense of just how wicked sin truly is.
Seven measurements of sin. All right, lame on me.
Okay, so first.
Get me.
Sin is a violation against the Creator himself.
Okay, so the very act of sinning goes against God's nature.
Yeah. It's the opposite of God's perfect moral character.
Right, right.
Second, it violates God's original intention for us.
His plan for humanity, you mean.
Exactly. Think about that state of perfect righteousness, you know, complete joy in relationship with God.
Paradise, basically.
Yeah, that's the height from which we've fallen.
Because of sin.
Because of sin. Third, sin is a violation against the Son on the cross.
Oh, wow. That's a heavy one.
Right? The sacrifice God made, sending Jesus to redeem us.
It really shows just how serious sin is, if it took that much to fix it.
Exactly.
Okay, that's three. What are the other four?
Okay, so fourth, sin violates God's image within us.
The image of God, right?
We were created to reflect his character in the world, and sin distorts that, damages it.
Makes us less of what we were meant to be.
Exactly.
Okay, number five.
Fifth, you can see sin's ultimate consequence by looking at the described destination of those who reject God.
Oh, right, the lake of fire.
Yeah, in Revelation.
That's pretty intense imagery.
It's a stark measurement of where sin ultimately leads.
If left unchecked.
Right. Sixth, and this is a really interesting perspective.
Okay, I'm listening.
Dr. Peterson brings in this idea of the unfinished mission.
Unfinished mission, what do you mean?
Sharing the good news of God's grace with you know, everyone in the world.
Right. The Great Commission.
Yeah, over 7 billion people out there.
A lot of work to do.
And he argues that, well, the darkness in the world, the brokenness, it's all caused by sin, right?
Yeah, I could see that connection.
And it highlights how urgent and important this mission is.
Makes sense.
He even talks about his involvement with organizations like Faith Comes by Hearing.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of them.
Emphasizing the need to spread the gospel, you know?
They're the word out.
Exactly. And then finally, seventh.
Okay, last one.
Sin can be seen as this, like, rogue element.
Rogue element.
Yeah, in God's otherwise good and harmonious creation.
Like a glitch in the system.
Yeah, something that doesn't belong.
Wow. Okay, so sin is bad. And it's bad in a lot of different ways.
And this brings us to Augustine's perspective on sin.
Oh, yeah. Augustine. Didn't he have some interesting ideas about sin?
Yeah, he did. Really profound, actually.
Okay, I'm all ears.
He talked about privatio boni.
Privatio boni. Okay, that's a new one.
Yeah, it means sin as a privation or absence of good.
Sin as the absence of good. So it's not like a thing itself.
Not exactly. Augustine argued that goodness is foundational to creation.
Okay, that makes sense. God created everything, and everything he created was good.
Right. So sin isn't some independent thing. It's the lack of that inherent good.
Oh, interesting.
He used these analogies like silence is the absence of sound and darkness is the absence of light.
Oh, I like that. So it's not that God created sin. It's just that some things lack the fullness of his goodness.
Exactly. It's like a void or a deficiency.
So to use your earlier analogy, it's not like God created pollution. It's more like he created a clean world and then we messed it up and that created pollution.
That's a good way to put it. And like we were saying before, it arises from our choices.
Our free will.
Yeah. So it's almost like a parasite.
A parasite.
Yeah. It needs the good to exist, but it weakens and detracts from it.
It feeds off the good, but ultimately destroys it.
Exactly.
I see.
And, you know, Dr. Peterson also talks about sin as a failure to image the creator.
Ah, right. That connects back to being made in God's image.
Exactly. So how does sin mess that up?
Well, you know how Psalm 19 says that the heavens and the earth declare God's glory?
Beautiful verse.
Right. Humanity, as God's highest creation, we share in that responsibility.
To reflect God's glory.
Yeah, exactly.
But the fall, as we call it, really disrupted everything.
It's like the whole system went haywire.
Yeah, creation itself was subjected to futility.
Things stopped working the way they were supposed to.
Right. Instead of us ruling with, you know, benevolence and wisdom.
Like God intended.
We see selfishness, violence, even in those early chapters of Genesis.
Yeah, Cain and Abel, the flood, all
that. It led to ecological damage, social breakdown, the whole nine yards.
So if humanity was supposed to represent God's rule on earth, we kind of dropped the ball.
We definitely did.
But we also talked about restoration, right? Like, for those who believe, the image of God is being restored in them.
That's right.
So what does that mean for how we live?
Well, it means we're called to live out our dominion, you know?
It's dominion, okay.
Yeah, through what's often called the cultural mandate.
Oh, right. I heard of that.
It's about bringing God's influence into all spheres of life.
So, like, our families, our churches.
Yeah, and even our involvement in government, business, everything.
Making a difference in the world for good.
Exactly. And Kenneth Myers, he argues that real change starts with individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Like that internal transformation through the message of the gospel.
Ah, so it's all connected, the Great Commission, cultural mandate, personal transformation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And all of this leads us to the idea that sin invites God's wrath.
Oof, yeah, wrath. Not the most comforting concept.
I know. It's a tough one for a lot of people.
Yeah, it doesn't really fit with the idea of a loving God, does it?
It's hard to reconcile, but Romans 1:19 is pretty clear.
What does it say?
It says that God's wrath is revealed against all ungodliness and unrighteousness.
Okay, so he's not just ignoring our bad behavior.
Right. But it's important to remember God's wrath isn't this, like, uncontrolled outburst.
Yeah, not like he's throwing a tantrum or something.
Exactly. It's an expression of his holiness and moral purity.
His justice, his commitment to what is right.
And as the theologian Robert Raymond explains, it leads to punishment.
So it's not just about God being angry. It's about consequences for our actions.
Exactly. And Martin Luther had this view. He saw God's wrath as stemming from our rejection of God, our disregard for him.
Interesting.
And remember how we talked about sin having these like negative and positive aspects?
Right. Commission and omission.
Well, God's response to sin also has two sides.
Okay. What are they?
The negative aspect is the removal of his favor and presence forever.
Oh, wow.
Like that final separation, you know, in places like Matthew 25.
Yeah. Heaven and hell.
And Mullard Erickson had this really interesting way of paraphrasing hell.
I'm curious. How did he put it?
He described it as God granting humanity's desire to be independent of him.
Whoa, that's heavy. Like, we want to be away from God, so he gives us what we want.
Exactly. And then there's the positive aspect, the imposition of punishment.
The fire and brimstone stuff.
Yeah, often described as eternal fire.
Okay, so there are real consequences for sin.
Yeah.
Both in terms of separation from God and actual punishment.
Right. And Dr. Peterson really drives this home. He argues that the cross of Jesus, it's the ultimate proof of God's judgment on sin.
Because Jesus took the punishment for us, in a way.
Exactly.
Wow. So sin leads to all these terrible things, but it's not always easy to see coming, is it?
That's the thing.
It's not like sin always shows up with like a big flashing neon sign.
Right. It can be so subtle.
Sneaky, even.
And that's what Dr. Peterson talks about next, the deceitfulness of sin.
Sin as a trickster, huh?
Exactly.
Okay. Tell me more.
Well, sin is tricky. It's deceptive. It doesn't always look evil.
Yeah, it can be very alluring.
And Jesus actually used humor to point this out.
Oh, wow. So?
He talks about someone trying to take a speck of dust out of someone else's eye.
Yeah, I remember that.
But they've got this huge log sticking out of their own.
Ooh, classic hypocrisy.
Right. It shows how blind we can be to our own faults.
While we're busy criticizing others.
Exactly. And the book of Hebrews warns us about this too.
About being blind to our own sin.
Yeah, it compares it to the Israelites' unbelief in the wilderness.
Right. They saw all those miracles, but they still doubted.
And it emphasizes how important it is to have, you know, other believers around us.
For support, accountability.
Exactly.
We need people to point out the logs in our own eyes.
Sometimes, yeah.
And speaking of logs, I remember this saying from my time in seminary.
Oh, yeah. What is it?
This book, the Bible, will either keep you from sin or sin will keep you from this book.
That's a good one.
Right. It really speaks to the power of God's word to, like, expose sin's tricks.
And then there's Jeremiah. He says that the human heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick.
Wow, that's pretty bleak.
It shows how vulnerable we are to sin's allure.
Yeah, it's easy to fall for its traps.
But thankfully, Jeremiah also points out that God sees our hearts.
He knows what's really going on inside.
And overcoming sin, it is possible through Christ.
That's the hope right there.
Exactly. So let's just recap what we've learned from this deep dive.
Right, hit me.
Sin is way more than just outward bad actions.
Right. It's about what we do, what we don't do.
And even those hidden motives that mess up our good deeds.
The three-headed monster of sin.
Exactly.
And it leads to both guilt before God and corruption within us.
It's an offense against a holy God.
And its enormity is just mind-boggling when you consider who God is and what he's done for us.
Right.
It's a lack of true goodness, a failure to reflect God's image.
And it has these real serious consequences.
God's wrath is nothing to mess with.
And underlying it all is this deceitfulness.
Sin as a master of his disguise.
So as you listen to all this, think about what resonates with you the most.
Yeah. What stood out to you?
What's your biggest challenge when it comes to sin?
Is it those hidden motives, the guilt, the feeling of being corrupted?
Or maybe it's the realization that sin is this, like, personal offense against God.
Yeah, that one's tough to swallow.
How does this understanding change your perspective?
And how might it change how you live going forward?
It's a lot to ponder, I know.
It is.
But hopefully, this deep dive has given you some clarity.
Some food for thought.
On this.